is the Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources. The date is Thursday, June 30th, 2005. This is going to be a very interesting meeting of this committee because we have a long agenda and we also all are carrying bills on the floor today. So it is going to be a lot of coming and going and stopping and starting. So please bear with me. If there is a call of the House and we all have to go up to the floor, please come back down here as soon as the call is lifted so we can continue the discussions that we have. What we're going to do here first is open a work session on House Bill 2656A relating to assessments on cattle. Mr. Hughes, could you take us through this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have before you House Bill 2656A. The bill would make mandatory the Oregon Beef Council assessment on cattle. The bill would set a minimum assessment of 50 cents per head of cattle and increase the maximum permissible assessment to $1 per head. Section 1, subsections 1 through 5, specify the uses for assessments up to 50 cents per head. The bill was referred to Agriculture and Natural Resources and voted out due pass. You will note in your packet that a revenue impact has been issued. The Legislative Revenue Office estimates approximately $900,000 in additional fee revenue per biennium will be generated assuming the assessment fee reaches the full $1 per head. There is a minimal fiscal impact. The Oregon Department of Agriculture estimates it will receive approximately $23,500 per biennium in other funds revenue for collection and administrative costs as authorized under Section 2, Subsection 5A.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee members? I know that one of the things that we've discussed whenever we come up against a fee bill is the willingness of the people that are going to pay the fees to pay the fees. And so I'm hoping that the Cattlemen's Association and the dairy folks will come forward and talk to us about how this bill came to be and whether or not they're supportive of it. Gentlemen, would you come forward, please? Mr. Stromberg, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Pleasure to be here with you in the committee. How the bill came about is that for some time we have made efforts to get additional revenue for range research and for animal science research. And we've also wanted to have an opportunity to project the enhancement of the cattle producer to the public, and that we think that our people do some very good stewardship things on the ground. So it was kind of a time to step up to the plate and come forward with some of this money instead of always coming to you and asking for the money. And with that in mind, the bill was drafted. I presented it to my side of the industry, the Oregon Cattlemen Association. I worked closely with the Dairy Association and talked it over, and there was some adjustments made. And so that's the essence of what we're trying to do as quickly as possible. I'll be happy to answer additional questions, but it was to start paying our fair share, if you will, for the things that we want and need as far as research.
Mr. Nelson.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, I'm Dave Nelson of the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and I'll talk very briefly about the bill, but I also went out and captured a real-life dairy farmer this morning, and with me is Don Moisen, who milks something around 1,000 cows north of Salem. So, and he can speak for the dairy industry and for the attitude of the producers probably much better than I can. Senate bill that we do support very strongly, Senate, House Bill 2656, the items in number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 that are listed in the bill, or laundry listed in the bill, are basically existing commodity commission authorities listed in the statute, but it does put a little more specificity as to where we desire the money to be spent. Most of it will be going for research to comply with environmental regulations that are now just coming to agriculture. In the sense of the dairy industry, have been involved in water quality and now are getting very much involved in the air quality issues relating to ammonia and methane emissions off of dairy lagoons and so on. So let me introduce Don Moisen, and he can give you an attitude on the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association and producers.
Mr. Moisen, thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us this morning. We appreciate having you here.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. And thank you, Dave. The dairy industry has talked about an increase in the Beef Council checkoff for several years, and somewhere in the neighborhood of the last 4 years, we've had a resolution at our annual convention where we talk about positions of leadership, and the dairy industry has wholeheartedly supported an increase in the beef checkoff. Not only do we want to be a player in the livestock industry, and I feel that this action here would enhance the livestock industry. I think it helps the dairy industry itself, being a part of the livestock industry, but also David mentioned some research that we could conduct using the money, and so we look and see how our commodity commission has benefited our industry, our industry, the dairy industry. We want to be a player and help the cattle industry, and we want to step up to the plate. And when we sell a cow, it's not our entire business like it is the cattleman, but it is I think the beef sales are about 10% of my dairy income, or 15, and then so the dairy industry does support this, and the individual producers will support it, and I think there's a lot of good purposes that will come from this action here today.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments from the committee members? Representative March.
Yes, I really wholeheartedly support the research components of this, and I think I really appreciate the industry stepping up. I have two concerns. One is the amount of increase in the fee, and the second is how much of this will go into like lobbying efforts and such.
Chair Morgan, Representative March, under the size of the increase is 50 cents per head. So the existing fee for the Beef Commission is a dollar a head. So it's however you want to compute that, you can make it sound like a 50% increase, or you can say it's 50 cents a head. So it becomes a larger item when prices are very low, and when prices are high, it's a smaller percentage. The industry has discussed it very thoroughly. They support it, so I guess that's about all I can say about that. As far as the lobbying, what would be considered to be lobbying, as I said very briefly initially, existing Commodity Commission statutes in Chapter 576, 77, and 78 all give the Commodity Commission's authority to look at state and federal regulations and to represent the interests of producers in that. This particular bill, they could spend, under Commission existing statute, they could spend their whole budget doing that. They don't do that currently, and aren't expected to do anywhere near that in the future. This bill does limit it, in fact put sideboards around that at 10 cents of the new increase would be restricted or could be used for that particular purpose. So I think it tends to be more of a limitation on what they can do in the area of state and federal regulation as opposed to current law, which doesn't have any sideboards around it.
Thank you. Mr. Stonebrook, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chairman, not really. Just one thing that I picked up from your previous hearings, and I heard Representative Schaffer say that he'd like to hear from the producers, and Don Moisson's here from the dairy side, and I also asked some of our past presidents, the Oregon Cattlemen, and some of the larger producers that would be paying the most, to send emails, and I hope that you have them, and I hope we didn't flood you too much, but to say, hey, we favor this. They voted unanimously at our cattlemen's board meeting to go ahead with this, and they did want the sideboards where they are, as Dave mentioned, because they felt they know exactly where this new fees will be spent.
And committee members, you also have at your place a copy of a letter from the chair of the Oregon Beef Council in support of the bill. Any further questions or comments for these gentlemen? Thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it. And this is a rare bill that comes to us ready to go. We don't have any amendments for it. If there is no further discussion on the bill, I would accept a motion to move House Bill 2656 to the full Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. I have the motion. Is there discussion? Representative Mark.
I won't be opposing this at this time or probably in full, but I'm reserving the right to maybe on the floor as I do some more research with people in the industry.
Thank you. So any further discussion on the motion? Then without any other objections besides the non-objection just noted, without objection, then the motion carries, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2656 and open a work session on Senate Bill 91A. Representative Schaffer, would you be willing to carry this in the full and on the floor?
The cattle assessment?
The cattle checkoff one?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, we're ready to go on Senate Bill 91A.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have before you Senate Bill 91A. The bill would authorize the South SLU National Estuarine Research Reserve Management Commission to adopt rules implementing a system of fees to recover costs incurred by the reserve. The bill would also establish the South SLU National Estuarine Research Reserve Management Account within the Common School Fund rather than the General Fund. The bill was initially brought before Senate Environment Land Use Committee, where it passed out on March 29th. Was then referred to land use on the House side, where it passed out on June 22nd. You'll note in your packet that there is a revenue impact. The Legislative Revenue Office estimates that a small amount of interest earnings will be credited to the Common School Fund once the fund is up and running. The Common School Fund earnings are shared amongst the school districts. There is a minimal fiscal impact. The Department of State Lands estimates that it will receive approximately $16,000 in net visitor fee revenue in 05-07 and about $35,000 in 07-09.
Questions or comments on the LFO presentation? Representative Sharp.
What kind of activities are we talking about, the fees that will be charged, that currently cannot charge for?
Currently, my understanding is that the reserve has no ability to charge fees for anything. So this would give them the ability to charge fees as they see fit. And it's thought that fees for parking, fees to get into the facilities, the kinds of things that you would see if you went to OMSI or any other kind of thing like this where people come to learn and enjoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more. How much is it going to cost to park there? How much is it going to cost to get in? Have they established that yet?
It would be up to the board that oversees the operation of the reserve to set the level of the fees.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to object to this, but I want to get on the record. I hope they don't make it to the point where poor folks can't afford to go there. I mean, I'm not opposed to this reserve in any way, shape, or form. It's a great thing. But, you know, everybody should be able to. And when they established it, I don't understand why there wasn't some kind of source of money in the first place. So, all right, thank you. I'll shut up now.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? I would take a motion to move Senate Bill 91 to the full Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. I have the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Without objection, the motion is carried, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 91A. Representative March, could I prevail upon you to carry this one?
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yes. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 91A and open a work session on Senate Bill 785.
Yeah, before you, Senate Bill 785, the bill would create the Plant Pest and Disease Emergency Response Fund in the Oregon Department of Agriculture. It would also allow the department to use monies from the fund after consultation with the State Nursery Research and Regulatory Committee for responding to pest and disease emergencies affecting the state's nursery industry. The bill's Section 2, Subsection 2, would require the department to maintain the fund's balance at $250,000 and authorize the department to impose a surcharge on license fees of nursery industry growers and dealers if the balance falls below that amount. According to the department, there are currently about 5,000 licensees that would be eligible for the surcharge. Section 2, subsection 3, directs the department to base the surcharge on those same criteria used for determining the license fee. The bill was referred to Senate Environment and Land Use on February 23rd and passed out of that committee without recommendation as to passage on a 5-0 vote.
Thank you. And committee members, questions or comments on the LFO presentation? Representative Schott?
It's the same question. And I see that.
And we have the likely suspects.
My question is, have not just among the leadership of the nurserymen, but have they went over this with their membership? And is there widespread support?
Mr. Simmons, welcome.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Representative Schaffler, yes, this is the idea was. Thank you very much for that reminder. My name is Mark Simmons. I am the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. And due to much greater national and international movement of plant material, the nursery industry in Oregon is much more vulnerable than it once was to new plant, pest, and disease threats. The nursery industry is a real Oregon success story. The largest segment of agriculture, 21,000 employees every year, almost $300 million in payroll, and we're expecting farm gate sales to be over $800 million when the new numbers come out in another month or so for the year. But this idea was initiated by nursery growers to provide the Department of Agriculture with the necessary resources to react quickly and decisively if we find new plant, pest, or disease threats that come into the state of Oregon, to preserve the integrity of our products in the marketplace and make sure our customers remain confident that we do, in fact, have the highest quality nursery goods in the nation coming out of Oregon. And there have been no votes on this bill so far, and I would certainly appreciate your support today.
Can you discuss very briefly for us the level of support for the fee within the industry?
There are a number, yes, Chair Morgan, members of the committee, there are a number of assessments that the nursery industry charges themselves. There is a research assessment that's like 0.004% of gross sales that we use to allocate to various research programs and such to benefit the industry. This would be an assessment of an equal amount that would flow into the dedicated fund in the Department of Agriculture, and there is good support for this. As I say, the members initiated this idea and asked that we have some assurance, in effect, an insurance policy available to not only tell our customers, yes, we're doing everything in our power to control new plant pests and disease threats and to be proactive. So.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Mr. Simmons? We have also, Representative Marsh.
I just want to thank the industry for stepping up. I know, the things like sudden oak death, it's been a real crisis to the nursery industry and also to potentially to our native oak species. So I appreciate the stepping up.
We also have Mr. Craig here from the Department of Agriculture. So if you have any questions that you'd like to direct for him, we could also call him up. You've been spared. Thank you so much, Mr. Simmons.
Thank you very much for hearing the bill this morning.
Any further discussion on Senate Bill 785?
So moved.
I have a motion to move Senate Bill 785 to the full budget committee with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion carries, and I will carry this one. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 785 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3502. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You have at your place a staff measure summary that explains what the measure does and the fiscal impact statement. House Bill 3502 abolishes the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, the Oregon State Fair Commission, and the position of Director of the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. It transfers all the duties and functions, powers, and properties to the State Parks and Recreation Department and continuously appropriates money from the Oregon State Fair account to the State Parks and Recreation Department. provides an operative date of these provisions of January 1, 2006, and requires the State Parks and Recreation Director to appoint a state advisory committee consisting of 7 members, a resident from each congressional district, and 2 persons to represent county fair interests. And it removes references to race meets conducted at the state fairgrounds, amends the State Parks and Recreation Department fund to allow use for the maintenance and operation of the Oregon State Fair, changes the all-terrain vehicle account from a separate account to a sub-account of the State Parks and Recreation Department fund, transfers 35% of the monies received from the all-terrain vehicle permits, fees, and unrefunded fuel tax to the State Parks and Recreation Department fund to be used for State Parks and Recreation Department purposes, including the maintenance and operation of the Oregon State Fair, declares an emergency, takes effect on passage. The background on this has to do with that. I think I'll just read it from the staff measure summary. Since 1997, the Oregon State Fair has experienced significant difficulty meeting its operating and debt service requirements out of existing revenue. In September 2004, the Emergency Board approved another fund's expenditure limitation increase of $600,000 to expend interest earnings on lottery-backed bond proceeds to complete bond-related capital projects. In November 2004, the fair identified a cash flow crisis based on reduced revenue projections and the failure to make a bond repayment of $568,000. The Emergency Board authorized the prepayment of all debt remaining on the fair revenue bonds of $1.1 million using bond reserves and interest earnings and $556,855 in lottery funds that had been reserved to meet liquidity requirements on the revenue bonds. The Department of Administrative Services has requested to unschedule $600,000 in other funds expenditure limitation that had been authorized. The 2005 legislature would determine if the unscheduled funds would be used for debt service or to complete bond-related capital projects. In January 2006, the fair identified a budget shortfall of approximately $600,000 based on the final revenue estimates from the 2004 annual state fair. The emergency board allocated $543,073 general fund to maintain operations through the remainder of the 03-05 biennium based on revenue and expenditure projections. A potential 2005-07 operating shortfall of $2.6 million was identified. The Joint Ways and Means Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee reviewed the operations of the fair and made the following findings. The fair and its management are isolated from state and local government partners and needs to strengthen its ties to state and local partners in order to assure statewide value, increase state community and business partnerships, and optimize operational efficiency. The fair is not self-sufficient and will need funding support for the foreseeable future. The current biennial estimate of general fund operating support is $4 million. However, a number of factors, including attendance at the annual state fair and net revenue from the multipurpose pavilion, will affect biennial support requirements. The fair needs assistance with agency management so that staff can focus on the statutory direction for the agency, which, pursuant to ORS 565.050, is to disseminate knowledge concerning and to encourage the growth and prosperity of all agricultural, stock raising, horticultural, mining, mechanical, artistic, and industrial pursuits in this state, and to conduct an annual state fair. Management assistance includes developing management goals, objectives, measures, and outcomes in developing the necessary reports to track performance against these management objectives. And the fair needs a commission that is directly involved in the marketing and management of the fair. The co-chairs, and now the 2 chairs of the House and Senate Budget Committees, determined that the best option would be to combine the fair with the Parks Department, since Parks has experience in managing state property, providing entertainment, and with collecting revenue. In addition, Parks has the resources to provide operational support to the fair.
Okay. Committee members, we are, first of all, let me take this opportunity to welcome Robin Lamont to our committee. Robin has works with the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee and has had many discussions relating to the State Fair. and has worked along with Ms. Jordan on this issue for quite some time, so we're very happy to have your expertise with us this morning. We are in public hearing, and I have two people that have signed up to testify, so I call forward right now Tim Wood, who is the director of the Oregon Parks Department, and when he's done, John McCulley, I will call you forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Tim Wood, Director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I'm here to testify on House Bill 3502 that, if adopted, would transfer the Oregon State Fair to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The Oregon Parks and Recreation Commission is opposed to House Bill 3502. Letter of the chair of our commission, the chair of our commission has expressed his opposition and the opposition of the commission to this concept to key legislators earlier this month. That letter is attached to my written testimony. While the commission appreciates the confidence the legislature has expressed in the department's ability to manage and operate the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, we're concerned what the long-term implications of this decision might be. Adoption of the bill would significantly change the tenor and focus of a department that has developed a national reputation as a leader in meeting and managing the park and outdoor recreation needs of the state. It would also jeopardize the future financial position of the department and affect its ability to deliver and maintain the level of service that has become its hallmark in the performance of its traditional mission. This is especially true if House Bill 3502 includes the transfer of debt incurred by the fair to the department. Exchanging $12 million of department debt that is currently in our budget that would normally be paid off in 2014 to acquire $24 million in debt from the fair that will not expire until 2019 saddles the department with a debt burden that was incurred through decisions made totally unrelated to and without the participation of the department, its mission, and the Parks and Recreation Commission. The term of the debt extends beyond the certainty of Measure 66 funding. And when the debt was acquired for the fair, it was obligated and secured against funding sources that weren't related to the Parks and Recreation Department. I would encourage the committee and the legislature to consider a more deliberate approach to achieving the objectives of the bill and finding an appropriate organizational structure for the fair. This could be achieved by studying the situation in the interim between sessions and developing recommendations for a bill to be introduced in the next legislature. My department would be willing to participate in that discussion and provide any assistance to the fair in the interim that we could do. Notwithstanding our expressed opposition to the bill, I'd like to further state that if the bill is adopted into law and the legislature and the governor directs us to take on this mission, that we'll take on these new responsibilities with commitment and energy necessary to make it successful. And it'll be carried out in a fashion that's consistent with the way our department has developed its reputation for service and integrity. If success of the fair in future biennia is dependent upon additional funding, I would anticipate that likely we would request some assistance through the general fund to help meet those needs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Ms. Jordan, can you take us through the issue around the transfer of the debt?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In transferring the State Fair property to the Parks and Recreation Department, the Parks Department is receiving all of the assets of the Parks Department, including the new pavilion building. The co-chairs decided that it was appropriate for them to also take on the debt for this new building because it becomes their asset. The issue that Tim raised about the lottery monies, the Measure 66 monies potentially not being available after 2014 is actually a moot point because this is a lottery-backed bond and would have to continue to be paid by lottery bonds. An allocation would be made after 2014 if that was to occur.
And you're talking about unallocated lottery funds, not the Measure 66 lottery funds.
After 2014, correct.
Representative Schaffer.
I grew up, I was born in Minnesota and grew up in Iowa, and the fairs there are huge and really famous. But I don't know anything about state fairs. And it's a question to LFO or the director or anybody who's listening. is there any way we can make this fair make money and pay its bills? Do other states' fairs make money and pay their bills? Now, I'm not necessarily personally opposed to the state supporting with general fund someday a fair, if that's what we have to do, because everybody loves Logan Fair, especially kids with their livestock and 4-H. But do any states' fairs pay for themselves? I mean, why aren't we going in that direction?
I'm asking the director to step forward, because I think she has some information.
Well, we also have that information, I'm sure. We've studied the state fairs since forever, and we have not found any state fairs in the United States that make money on fairs, except for those that have... Well, no state fairs make money.
Some
they're
state
all
fairs,
substitutes.
Madam Chair, they do have alternate revenue sources, but for example, I think, there's one that has a racetrack, and it's like car racing, and there are fairs that have different financial arrangements where there are other sources of revenue, but just in terms of a state fair in that strict concept, no, they are not profit-making entities.
Right. Thank you.
Katie, do you have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie Cannon. The fairs that are even come close to that tend to be in large metropolitan areas that pull from millions of people and tend to be more semi-independent or independent rather than government agencies. They have less bureaucracy.
All right. Thank you.
Representative March.
And this has to do with the debt. Are we restructuring the debt? Presumably there's an existing debt of the department of $12 million plus and $12 million from the state fair. Are those two separate, do they remain two separate debt streams? And so the $12 million that's on the payoff to 2014 will be paid off by 2014. This state fair one that's lottery money will be paid off in 2019.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, there are two separate debt instruments, and the proposal that you will be voting on later in the agency's budget is to defease the existing debt in Parks and Recreation, so it will be paid off during the next biennium. The debt from the state fair that will be transferring with the agency would continue to make payments on unless they got a windfall from lottery monies and requested that we pay that one off as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. John, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Oregon Fairs Association, and the Oregon State Fair is a longtime and very valuable member of our association. Our association is not taking any position on this bill this morning, but I do appear before you to, I guess, raise some concerns. It appears that we are talking about a marriage here where neither the bride nor groom are very enthusiastic about the union that's about to take place.
That's right.
And
we do a lot of shotgun marriages here.
Judging, since it's an area of my some of my background and expertise, judging from those kind of marriages in other societies, they tend to be much more successful than those marriages done in a more typical Western
Mr. Chair, that all depends on how you measure success.
Well, that may be. And Mr. Chair, we hope that's true in this case today.
Yeah.
The only, I guess, concern we have is we would hope that once this occurs, and it, of course, is a major change, that the Oregon State Fair would continue to be involved with the fair family in the state of Oregon. They play a very valuable role, a leadership role, among all of the fairs in the state. As you know, many of the people who participate in the county fairs, especially 4-H and FFA members,
look forward to earning the right to compete at the Oregon State Fair. It is the equivalent of the state tournament in sports for many of those kids. So we hope they continue to fill that role. Over the past few years, at the direction of the legislature, the county fairs and state fairs have grown more closely together in their work. We participate in a number of activities together, trying to synergize the resources that we all have. And I think that is a continuing option we would like to pursue. The Oregon State Fair also provides a scholarship, one each to 4-H and FFA members. They have graciously invited the county fairs, who also have a scholarship program, to participate with them in that, so that is coordinated. We work together on the interviews and offer those scholarships. These are just some programs that you don't hear a lot about, but we hope that they are continued once this union occurs. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Joplin.
You know, with ever-increasing population and cost and ever-decreasing resources for money for kids' activities or education, I hate to ask this question, but we're a budget committee, and 4-H and FFA, I'm very familiar with them. I was never in them. My sister was in 4-H, but I don't remember how she participated in it as far as fees go. Do these kids' families have to pay fees for this participation? Do they pay a fee at the county level or at state level? And I'm not suggesting we do that, John. I'm just asking if that currently, anything like that goes on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sharpler, no, there are no fees involved. And as a matter of fact, to be very honest with you, one of the big issues confronting county fairs and state fairs is the below-cost subsidy that is provided to encourage kids' participation. I think all fairs see that as one of the key missions of theirs, is to support youth in the community. So many of those activities are provided at subsidized.
Mr. Chair, I want to make it very clear. These are subsidies that are well worth us spending our community's dollars on. I don't want in any way, shape, or form anyone to walk out of this room thinking I think different, because these kids that participate in this stuff are examples of what youth should be. So I just want to make sure everybody's aware of how I feel about it. Thank you very much.
Other questions for Mr. McCauley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, may I ask
Mr. Wood,
please. Question. Mr. Wood, does the governor not support this bill?
Representative Schaffer, I think the governor's office's position has been, or at least representatives on the policy side, has been that if the Parks and Recreation Department were to participate in funding for the fair, that it be done on a one-time basis with an interim look at what a more deliberate approach as to what the future of the fair should be. That's my understanding.
Right.
I don't know that there's opposition, but that's has been the position.
Thank you very much.
Mark. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is a correct question for you or probably for you. I see we're deleting appears that we're deleting the ability of the state fair to conduct racing. Is that correct? I see a deleted section on, for example, page 13.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, what we're deleting in statute is the requirement that there be racing at the state fair. There is no longer any facility for racing at the state fair. If the Parks and Recreation Department chooses to develop part of their property into a racetrack, they have that ability to do that without statutory authority.
Okay, you haven't seen the pig races then. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. I'm not sure who's appropriate to respond to it. I'm sure probably it isn't in your area, Tim, but what
what amount of volunteer work do we get at the state fair? Do you have, or is this,
I know at county fairs, they're almost exclusively volunteer work. They have a county fair board and that sort of thing.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee. We have about 100 people that come in prior to fair and during fair and then during the breakdown that come in and actually do the setup and tear down of a lot of those open class departments. We've had difficulty in some areas of using volunteers because, for example, in the entertainment area, they come if they like the music. If they don't like the music, they don't come. So we've had to use them in areas where they're very dedicated to, like in the open class departments.
Yeah, I think that typically the volunteers mm-hmm. need to be pretty dedicated to right. whatever it is. How much, if I could ask all of you then, how much, what kind of a paid payroll do you have in the county fair program? I mean, in the state fair.
Just a moment.
Yeah, right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The estimated personal services for 0507 is just under $7
million. $7 million, good. Okay.
Chair Jensen, also on those lines, you have to understand we not only do fair, but we do 171 events throughout the year. That these people, very few people have only fair responsibilities. They are really balancing both the expo events and the fair events.
So that $7 million payroll then is a
biannual figure for all of the operations.
$3.5 million a year in all of the activities. Thank you.
We got to move this, or we're not going to have a chance.
Oh, you can move it with that.
It could be included.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Can talk to me about this amendment then.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill as it is put together provides an operative date of January 1, 2006 for sections 1 through 10 and allows the Parks Director to take any action before that date to make it sooner if he chooses. But sections 31 through 33 have to do with the revenue streams and treasury accounts of the state fair. We need to make a technical amendment to move sections 31 through 30, or include sections 31 and 32-33 in that operative date period of time so that they have the ability to write their checks out of the accounts and so on in the first 6 months. So the recommendation is to, on page 3 in line 22, add after sections 1 to 10 and sections 31 to 33.
Could you give me the page and number?
Page 3,
gotcha.
Line 22, after right. sections 1 to 10, add the words and sections 31 to 33. And those amendments are being drafted in at council's as I speak.
Thank you.
I have one more person signed up for a public testimony, and that's, did Mr. McGuire get a
yes.
chance to testify?
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did?
Okay.
Is he happy?
Sure. He's happy.
He's kind of happy.
He's smiling.
Relative to this bill.
That's better than we are.
Anybody else here to testify?
I think
we have one more.
Yeah, I have no one else signed up, but if there is anyone else that would like to testify, please come forward at this time. We'd be glad if you have testimony to hand out.
I don't.
Okay, please just go right ahead.
My name is Joe Schaefer. I'm with SEIU Local 503. We represent the employees at the State Fair and the State Parks. We have looked over this proposal. And it's something that we're comfortable with at this point. We do see the need for the State Fair to have more oversight in their administration, and so we think that this brings that to them, plus access to other revenues, which we think is important for the State Fair and their facilities. So that's basically where we stand.
Well, and I know that a great deal of the reason why the fair goes is because of the work that you and your comrades down there do. So please extend our thanks for working under some probably very strange and stressful circumstances from time to time to make that work the way that it does. We really appreciate your efforts.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, I know our members there do work pretty darn hard, so we're hoping this brings a little bit of stability to their program. And I know there's a lot of stress in that work site because of the way the finances have gone and the administration there. So I think this right away change is a little stressful, but we think that it's a long-term a better place for them.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. We appreciate the time that you took to come here today. And is there anyone else that wishes to come forward and testify? If not, I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3502. Representative Jensen.
I move the proposed amendments to House Bill 3502.
Should we conceptually amend at this point, or should we amend in the full?
No, we should do it here.
Okay, I have a motion to conceptually amend House Bill 3502 on page 3, section 11, line 22, after the word section 1 to 10, add the words and section 31 to 33. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3502 as conceptually amended to the full committee on budget.
Beautiful motion. The motion has been eloquently made, so is there discussion on it? Representative Marks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to be opposing this at this time. I think it's something that is well worth consideration. I know we've dealt with this issue a number of times of trying to bail out the fair. The two things I wanted to do, one is put on the record that we did receive some concern about the appointment process for the State Fair Advisory Committee as being appointed by, under this bill, appointed by the Parks and Recreation Director. And in the past, I think that's gone through the governor's office, so that is, I think that is a consideration that maybe at some future point this might be worthy of consideration for amendment. Secondly, I mean, this is a pretty major shift and a pretty major policy thing that we're asking the department to take on. And I think I'd feel a little more comfortable if we were doing it on a shorter-term basis, a transition basis, till we've figured out the best long-term strategy. But I won't be opposing it in the committee here today, although I may at a future date.
Thank you. Committee members, this is a policy change for the state of Oregon, but I think that it's one that has been talked about a great deal through all the time that I've been in the legislative process. Issues around the state fair keep coming up. And it's clear that there are backroom issues with the management of the agency and issues around the financial capacity of the agency to keep its head above water and the financial viability of the fair. The fair is a huge asset to the state of Oregon. Those of us in the rural areas of the state look to the state fair as kind of the top of the triangle, the top of the peak for the kids that work so hard in the FFA and 4-H programs. It also is a remarkable place for us to showcase the natural resource wealth and the great things that we do in the ag industry, in the timber industry, in the commercial fishing industry. But really the state park could be so much more for Oregon than it is right, or the state fair could be so much more for Oregon than it is right now. And this is an opportunity, I think, for the Parks Department to acquire an extremely unique property in the state of Oregon that represents Oregon's agricultural, artistic, and cultural heritage. and Parks doesn't need to use any of its Measure 66 funds to acquire this property. It would simply be transferred over. Parks has the opportunity to turn the fairgrounds into an urban park that would attract visitors not only from Oregon, but from the entire nation. And there isn't any reason why Measure 66 funds shouldn't be used to maintain and upgrade this wonderful addition to the state park system. The fairgrounds include several buildings that have recently been renovated and constructed. And since Parks now owns these facilities, there is no reason why Measure 66 funds should not be used to pay the debt service for the cost of renovating the buildings and the new facilities. Parks expects to receive $9 million in unanticipated additional Measure 66 revenue as a result of line games and the adjustment to retailer commissions. The investment in the state fairgrounds will use less than half of that money to make that project work. A little bit about legislative intent here. The legislative intent for this transfer is that the Oregon State Parks and Recreation Commission will create a new vision for the Oregon State Fairgrounds that incorporates Oregon's unique beauty, heritage, agriculture, arts, and culture. Some of the expected outcomes include making the state park fairgrounds accessible to all Oregonians, making the annual state fair truly a celebration that's affordable through the use of state resources, embracing the Oregon State Fairgrounds within the mission and goals of the Oregon Department of Parks and Recreation. Colleagues, there's not a lot of times that we get an opportunity like this that comes before us. I think that we have here a diamond in the rough, that this can truly be turned into something that not only appeals to the rural folks of the state and gives them a reason to come to Salem for 2 weeks each year, but it can be something that appeals to the urban folks of the state of Oregon, too, and highlights the incredible strides that have been made in the electronics industry and the incredible arts scene, music and performing arts that Oregon has to offer the people of the state. And I think that this is a platform that we should nurture, because it's a place where Oregon can come together regardless of its philosophical or geographic or political or economic or sociological orientation and celebrate the incredible place that it is. And I know that this is a stretch, that this is a different way of doing things, but quite frankly, if we don't do things differently, then this fair is in great peril. And we also need to pay great attention to the fact that there are about 50 other weeks of the year that the fair is there and needs to operate on a sustained basis. So I very much appreciate your willingness to move this concept forward and allow the discussions to continue on the bill. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you brought up a very interesting point regarding Measure 66 funds. I don't think it was the intent of the voters at the time of passage of Measure 66 that the funds developed go into operating the state fair. However, that's not to say that given the opportunity today, they would not do that. I just want to make it clear that that was not, I don't think, part of the vision at the time. Of course, times change, I have concerns, particularly when we start the use of Measure 66 funds, which I don't think were ever intended at this point. I mean, this may be something that we may need to at some point refer out to the voters and let them make those kinds of that kind of a decision. Was this is this compatible with the intent that you had in passage of Measure 66?
And if I could address that point, because that has been the subject of great discussion, and we've gone back and read the language of the initiative several times, and I do believe that this does fit in with the intent of the mission. And I would also submit for your consideration that when the voters passed Measure 66, They didn't anticipate the extreme drop-off, the state losing 20% of its general fund revenue and being unable to shoulder other burdens. I think that we also didn't anticipate the increasing nature of the revenue that was going to be generated by this. And this is all through the recession that we've been weathering. We've seen the money going into the lottery increasing over time with the addition of the line games and the renegotiation of the split with the retailers. This gives another large chunk of money to this process. So it's very difficult to go back and gauge intent when you're looking forward. But I think that I personally feel comfortable that this is within the original intent of the language of the initiative. And if there are no further comments, we have a motion to move the bill to full as conceptually amended. Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, then, the motion carries. And I would be very glad to carry the bill. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3502 and open a work session on House Bill 5130.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You have your work session documents in front of you. We've had a previous work session which we worked all of the policy packages and technical adjustments of the budget and reserved some in anticipation of the transfer of state fair to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. So I'm going to direct your attention to page 3. The first policy package that we had set aside was for $3 million of the additional lottery revenues that the agency anticipates as a result of increased lotteries during the biennium and the line games. They had proposed to add $3 million to continue phase two of the Washington County State Park. That's not recommended. Do you want me to just go through all of the recommendations and make one motion or do them separately?
Let's do it all in one motion. I think people are pretty familiar with this, having gone through it.
Thank you. And page 4, package 170, was a package to increase the facility investment expenditure by $6 million. We're recommending approval with an increase of $500,000 for a total increase of $6.5 million in the facility investment program. Page 5, package 250, was additional lottery revenue. The agency proposed $8.2 million. We're recommending that we approve $5,791,424 to defease the 1998 lottery backed bond and not recommending the additional infrastructure upgrades at Cove Palisades, Silver Falls, and Fort Stevens. On page 6, package.
Representative Shoffler.
How long have these... I'm not opposing to not doing this right at this time. I realize the money and situation. But how long have these upgrades been needed? And do we see these upgrades being done anytime in the near or distant future?
Mr. Director.
And exactly what are we talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler. These are identified projects, and what it would have allowed us to do was to expedite them. We have a long list of projects at Silver Falls. This is one of our oldest parks and has many, many structures and infrastructure. And so we have been working that over, really we'll be working that over the life of Measure 66. This would just, this does not stop that. This would just add to it. It's the same as the case with the Cove and
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. I've enjoyed all three of these parts, so very interesting. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Page 6, package 120. The governor's recommended budget requested a procurement and contract specialist one position, which we approved previously. There has been a classification review completed, which determined that the classification should be procurement and contract specialist two. LFO is recommending approval of that classification change with direction to absorb any additional costs that the classification might cause. Page 7, package A12 is recommending $500,000 be added to the grant, the local grants program. Package 813 is recommending $500,000 be added to the land acquisition program. Package 814 adds a limited duration PEMF for 9 months to oversee transition of the State Fair to Oregon Parks and Recreation for $80,795. Package 815 provides operating expenses for 12 months, 59 positions, 19.96 FTE. We're recommending this with the understanding that if the Oregon State Fair demonstrates a need for other funds cash, that OPRD will transfer sufficient revenue to cover the gap, and that the director shall monitor expenses during the transition period to ensure accountability. What we are doing with the State Fair budget is taking 12 months of their expenditure limitation and giving it in another bill to the State Fair so that they can operate for the next 6 months while they work through the transition. The budgets will then marry up, and the entire biennial budget will be part of State Parks as they transition. Package 816 is the debt service for the sale of lottery bonds to construct the new pavilion. That's $4,232,585 lottery funds. That's being recommended.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendations to the budget?
One minute.
I just want to comment that I would have liked to have seen us be able to go ahead with the facility investments at this time.
I would take a motion to move the LFO recommendations to the budget. Have motion. Is there discussion? Discussion? Without objection, the motion is carried. We're standing these as we're under a call, and we'll be back as soon as we can. Education and Natural Resources, and continue the work session on the Parks and Recreation budget.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we're now at budget notes. The first budget note was previously approved by the subcommittee. The next three budget notes have to do with the transfer of the State Fair to Oregon Parks and Recreation. The first budget note is on interim work group. The State Parks and Recreation Department is directed to establish an interim work group by no later than August 1st, 2005 to assist the department with the transfer of the Oregon State Fair to the State Parks and Recreation Department. The work group will include but not be limited to staff from the Legislative Fiscal Office, Budget and Management, the Office of the Governor, and affected agencies. The work group will be responsible for identifying all of the issues related to the transfer and for recommending actions to resolve these issues to the State Parks and Recreation Director. The department is encouraged to seek the assistance of other state agencies that have experience with agency consolidation in developing the transfer plan and to include representatives from these agencies in the work group. The State Parks and Recreation Department will report to the Emergency Board at the meetings closest to July 1, 2006, and December 1, 2006 on the progress of the work group. The December 1, 2006 report should also include a review of any fiscal or policy issues that the 2007 Legislative Assembly will need to resolve.
Let's go ahead and do all three of these because they're all related.
Okay. The next budget note has to do with the State Fair Facilities Modernization Master Plan, Strategic Plan, and Marketing Plan. The State Parks and Recreation Director is urged to appoint a State Fair Advisory Committee on passage of House Bill 3502. As directed by the State Parks and Recreation Department, the State Fair Advisory Committee will undertake an immediate review of the use and marketing of the state fairgrounds, including opportunities for collaboration with other state and local partners. State Fair Advisory Committee will recommend revisions to the State Fair Facilities Modernization Master Plan, the State Fair Strategic Plan, and the State Fair Marketing Plan to the State Parks and Recreation Director. The State Parks and Recreation Director will be responsible for adopting revisions to the State Fair Facilities Modernization Master Plan, the State Fair Strategic Plan, and the State Fair Marketing Plan. When these revisions have been adopted, but in any event by no later than the meeting closest to July 1, 2006, the State Parks and Recreation Department will report to the Emergency Board on progress in revisions to these plans and on its strategies for the use and marketing of the state fairgrounds. The next budget note is the Oregon State Fair positions and classifications. The State Park and Recreation Department is directed to immediately undertake a study of the positions and classifications in the Oregon State Fair and, effective upon the transfer, to realign these positions and classifications with those of the department.
And let's go ahead and do the budget report comment.
And then the comment that we would have inserted in the budget report itself is that the Department of Administrative Services will be requested to unschedule the other funds expenditure limitation provided to the Oregon State Fair based on actual expenditure needs, and the State Parks and Recreation Department may need to seek an adjustment to its other funds expenditure limitation from the Emergency Board following the transfer of the Oregon State Fair, depending on the balances that are transferred.
Questions or comments on the three budget notes and the budget report comments? Representative March.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the budget report comment and the meeting with the Emergency Board, would have felt more comfortable if we said other funds or general fund. They may need to seek some general fund support at the e-board as well.
Think so?
It's entirely possible.
They won't.
Okay.
And they wouldn't. And they wouldn't get it if they did.
Further comments. I would accept a motion to move the three budget notes, budget note ECD, and the budget report comment that are delineated in the LFO memo dated June 29th into the bill.
Boom.
Have the motion. Is there discussion?
No.
Objection. Representative March.
There you go.
You do. No.
Just to
any
the
other end. Objections? With that one objection noted, the motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then we need to approve the budget bill in the amount of $187,765,809 and 865 positions and 560.82 FTE by approving the following amendments to House Bill 5139, and that's to place all of House Bill 5056 into House Bill 5039 with the numbers that are shown on your work session pages. No, Madam Chair, unless you insist.
No.
Very slow.
I would accept, or first of all, any discussions on the recommended appropriation bill amendments? I would take a motion to approve to place all of House Bill 5056 into House Bill 5139 and make the with the numbers that are delineated on page 9 of the LFO memo dated June 29th, 2005. Have the motion. Is there discussion? Objection. Without objection, that motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And finally, I probably don't have to say this, but I'll put it on the record anyway, that we recommend under the performance measures that the Parks Director review the performance measures for the State Fair and report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by October 2006 any recommendations relating to performance measures.
And I would now take a motion to move House Bill 5139 as amended and conceptually amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. I have the motion. Discussion? Representative Mark.
I'm not going to be objecting at this time, although as I study this issue more, I may object in full or the floor.
Further discussion? Further, any objections? Without objection, then the motion is carried. And I'd be glad to carry this one in full and on the floor. And that will close the work session on House Bill 5139. I adjourn the committee.